All right, so we're going to talk about, something that a lot of people have heard of, but maybe not really understand,
Yeah.
and that's the meniscus. We're going to talk about the meniscus chapter in probably the world's best free peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine. It's called Orthopedia, and it's available at orthopedia.com. It's edited by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayette. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book.
Yeah, read the book.
So, the meniscus, it's something that, as I said, like a lot of people have heard of, but maybe don't really understand what it is and why it's so important.
Right.
So maybe we should start by just defining what the meniscus is.
Yeah, so there are two menisces per knee, a medial meniscus and a lateral meniscus. And it's basically a fibrocartilaginous structure that sits on top of the tibia, and interacts with the femur. And it serves as a shock absorber. So, one way to think about it, or to visualize it is it's kind of wedge-shaped. So if you look at it, from the side, its highest point is kind of at the periphery near the capsule, and that's about 5 millimeters in height.
Okay.
And then it kind of tapers centrally. If you look at it, from above, it kind of has a crescent shape.
Ah, okay.
And, the word meniscus actually, comes from the Greek word mene, which means moon, which is the same root as the word menstrual.
Interesting.
By the way, the correct pronunciation is menisci for the plural.
Meniski. Got it. So you said that they act as shock absorbers.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit more about that for us?
Yeah. So, as I said, the meniscus is made up of fibrocartilage, and it's actually more elastic than articular cartilage. So it provides some direct cushioning when we're walking and running and jumping. The other thing is that it basically increases the contact area between the rounded femoral condyle and the, relatively speaking, flatter tibial plateau.
Right.
And we know that pressure is equal to force divided by area. So by increasing the area, we decrease the pressure.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it's kind of like, when martial arts practitioners practice Yukimi or break falls, they try to maximize the surface area of their body that comes into contact with the ground when they fall in order to decrease the pressure on any one point. Or like, the specialized medical beds that are designed to prevent pressure ulcers in patients who are bedridden for long periods, those beds have surfaces that distribute the patient's weight over a larger area to reduce the pressure on any one point.
Right. So spreading out the force over a wider area.
Exactly.
I got it.
And this is actually illustrated in figure 2 in the Orthopedia chapter. But even if you can't see the figure, hopefully you can visualize what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you talk about the meniscus acting as a shock absorber, but I understand that it also has some other mechanical functions.
Right. So the meniscus, particularly the medial meniscus, plays an important role in stabilizing the knee. The way it does that is through what's known as the chalk block effect.
Chalk block effect. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so it's kind of like a, when you park your car on a hill and you put a chalk block behind the wheel to prevent it from rolling backwards.
Oh, okay.
Meniscus kind of does the same thing. It helps prevent anterior tibial subluxation, so it prevents the tibia from sliding too far forward in relation to the femur.
Okay.
And this is again illustrated in figure 3 in the Orthopedia chapter. And you can kind of see how the femoral condyle kind of rests against the posterior horn of the meniscus and creates this jock block effect. And of course, the meniscus works in conjunction with other ligaments like the ACL to keep the knee stable.
So the meniscus is not only acting as a cushion, but it's also helping to control the movement of the knee and keep it stable.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's talk about blood supply,
Okay.
'cause that's obviously important for healing.
Right. So, only the peripheral part of the meniscus has a blood supply, and that's through blood vessels. So we call that area the red zone.
Cool.
And then the central area of the meniscus does not have a blood supply, and that's called the white zone.
Right.
So red zone for blood, white zone for no blood.
Easy to remember.
Yeah. So what that means is that if you have a tear in the red zone, it actually has the potential to heal, sometimes even without surgery.
Really?
Yeah. Whereas if you have a tear in the white zone, it generally does not have the capacity to heal even if it's sewn back together.
Wow.
Now, there are some exceptions to this. Tears that occur right at the junction between the red zone and the white zone, which is sometimes referred to as the pink zone, those can be a little bit more difficult to predict in terms of whether they'll heal or not. But we won't get into that today.
Okay. So it's important to know where the tear is.
Exactly.
Okay. So if the meniscus itself doesn't have any pain sensors, why is it that a meniscus tear can be so painful?
That's a great question. So you're right. The meniscus itself does not have any nociceptors, which are the nerve endings that sense pain.
Okay.
But when you tear your meniscus, it can cause irritation of the nearby synovium, which is the lining of the knee joint, and the capsule, which is the fibrous tissue that surrounds the knee joint. And those structures do have pain sensors.
Okay, so it's not the meniscus itself, but it's the structures around it.
Exactly.
That are causing the pain.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, you know, if you get a splinter under your fingernail, the splinter itself doesn't have any feeling, but it irritates the skin around it, and that's what causes the pain.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate that feeling. Okay, so the orthopedia chapter points out that orthopedic surgeons often make a distinction between different types of meniscal tears.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that distinction important?
Yeah, so they distinguish between isolated acute tears in young patients, tears that occur in conjunction with other injuries in young people, such as cruciate ligament tears or collateral ligament tears, and then what we call degenerative tears, which typically occur in older individuals who may have arthritis in their knees. And the reason why this distinction is important is because it affects how we manage the tear.
So in other words, if you're a young athlete,
yeah,
and you tear your meniscus,
right,
that's a different scenario than if you're an older person with arthritis.
Exactly.
Who tears their meniscus.
Right. So if there are other significant injuries in a younger person, those injuries often take precedence.
Okay.
So, for example, if someone tears their ACL and their meniscus, we'll often focus on fixing the ACL first.
Right.
If someone has a degenerative meniscus tear along with arthritis, the focus may be more on treating the arthritis as a whole.
Okay.
So for our discussion today, we're going to focus on isolated acute tears in young patients without degenerative changes.
All right. So how can we tell if someone might have some degenerative changes in their knee?
Well, one way to get a rough idea is to multiply the patient's age by their body mass index, or BMI. Yeah. And if the result is greater than 1,200, there's a slightly higher chance that there may be some degenerative changes.
Okay.
Now, this is not a perfect test. It's just a rule of thumb.
Right.
But if there's any doubt, we can always get a weight-bearing x-ray to get a better look at the joint.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the history.
Okay.
What's the typical history of an isolated acute meniscal tear in a young patient?
Yeah. So typically we're talking about, active young adults who sustain an injury during some sort of activity. They'll present with pain and swelling after an acute event. And typically they'll describe a twisting injury with the foot planted and the knee flexed. And the pain is usually localized to the joint line.
Okay.
So right between the femur and the tibia.
All right. So what about the physical exam?
Okay. So on physical exam, we might see an effusion, which is just fluid in the knee joint.
Okay.
There's usually tenderness at the joint line.
Okay.
If the patient has full range of motion, they may have pain with maximal flexion.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll have incomplete range of motion. And particularly concerning is incomplete extension.
Okay.
Which suggests that there may be a displaced tear that is blocking terminal extension.
So they can't fully straighten their knee.
Right.
Okay.
And then limited flexion can also be present.
Okay.
That can be due to, a fragment of the meniscus getting caught in the joint or just due to effusion or pain. You know, the patient just doesn't want to bend their knee all the way because it hurts.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that there are some situations where a meniscal injury might take precedence over other injuries.
Right.
Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, so a classic example is what we call a bucket handle tear.
A bucket handle tear.
Yeah, so this is basically a large longitudinal tear where a central fragment of the meniscus is flipped into the intercondylar notch.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, you know, if you imagine a bucket handle that's been torn away from the bucket.
Okay.
That's kind of what it looks like.
Huh.
And it's important to recognize these tears because they can cause a block to motion, and they can also lead to damage to the articular cartilage.
All right.
And they can also damage the fragment itself, which could make it difficult or even impossible to repair.
So these tears need to be addressed quickly.
Right.
Okay.
As the orthopedia chapter says, leaving that a bucket handle flapping in the knee is a bad move.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let's talk about treatment.
Okay.
What are the treatment options for acute meniscal injuries?
Yeah, so not all meniscal tears require surgery.
Okay.
Tears that are causing a mechanical block, like a bucket handle tear.
Okay.
Those are often considered for urgent arthroscopy.
Okay.
And during arthroscopy, the surgeon can either repair the tear or remove the damaged portion of the meniscus.
Okay.
And the decision of whether to repair or remove is based on a number of factors, including the location of the tear and the health of the meniscus tissue.
Okay.
So generally speaking, white zone tears are usually removed. Because they're unlikely to heal.
Right.
And macerated menisci, or menisci that are internally torn.
Okay.
Those are also usually removed, regardless of the location of the tear.
Okay.
And it's important to note that, some tears may become asymptomatic without surgery.
Really?
Yeah. So, the tear doesn't actually heal, but it just stops bothering the patient. So it's reasonable for patients to try a period of rest and anti-inflammatory medications, especially if a repair is unlikely to be successful. There was actually a study in England where they looked at patients who were on the waiting list for meniscus surgery.
Okay.
And they found that a significant number of those patients actually canceled their surgery because their symptoms had resolved on their own.
Wow. So sometimes conservative management is enough.
Right.
Okay. So if a portion of the meniscus is torn, why not just remove the whole thing?
Well, that's a good question, and it might seem like a logical solution, but the meniscus actually plays a very important role in the knee.
Okay.
And complete removal of the meniscus can lead to arthritis.
Oh.
In fact, about 75 years ago, surgeons used to think that the meniscus was a vestigial structure.
A vestigial structure.
Yeah. So like something that was left over from evolution that didn't really serve a purpose anymore.
Okay.
So they used to routinely remove the meniscus whenever they encountered a tear. But in 1948, a surgeon named Thomas John Fairbank published a paper called Knee Joint Changes After Meniscectomy.
Okay.
And in this paper, he showed that complete removal of the meniscus actually led to some very specific degenerative changes in the knee.
Okay.
So those changes include a squaring of the femoral condyles, a peaking of the tibial spines, a ridging of the articular cartilage, and a narrowing of the joint space.
So those are the Fairbanks changes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so nowadays we try to preserve as much of the meniscus as possible.
Makes sense.
We have been talking about a chapter from the free and peer-reviewed textbook Orthopedia at www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Pinney, and Bayet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book.
Right. So the goal is to save the meniscus whenever possible.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's do a quick review of some of the key terms that we've discussed.
Okay.
First up, meniscus.
So the meniscus is a fibrocartilaginous structure that sits on top of the tibia and contacts the femur. And it has three important mechanical functions.
Okay. What are those?
So it acts as a shock absorber. It distributes load, and it provides stability to the knee.
Okay, great. Next up, effusion.
Effusion is just fluid in the joint.
Okay.
And in the setting of a knee injury, it can be a sign of a meniscus tear.
Okay. Next, red and white zones.
Right. So the red zone is the peripheral part of the meniscus that has a blood supply.
Okay.
And the white zone is the central part that does not have a blood supply.
Okay. Next, bucket handle tear.
So a bucket handle tear is a large longitudinal tear where a central fragment of the meniscus is flipped into the intercondylar notch.
Okay. And lastly, Fairbanks changes.
So Fairbanks changes are the characteristic changes that we see in the knee after a meniscectomy, which can lead to arthritis.
Okay. Well, that was a really informative deep dive into the meniscus.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah. So I think it's important to remember that the meniscus is a very important structure in the knee.
Right.
And it plays a vital role in keeping our knees healthy and functioning properly.
Absolutely.
So if you do injure your meniscus, it's important to see a doctor and get it checked out.
Great advice. Well, we have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia. Orthopedia by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayet. It is available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.